Beats of Bhakti.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Beats of Bhakti podcast. If you have not had an opportunity, please do listen back to the first introductory episode to get a good feeling and idea about what this podcast is all about and what you can expect to feel into and hear about. In this episode, I interviewed the magical mantra music making duo Illumina. They do sacred concerts and hold space for people to sing mantra and chant and explore their inner world through movement. They also do their what's becoming even more popular, Magic Mantra Mondays, where they do a Facebook live stream and lead everyone in different sacred mantra. They have also released 3 devotional albums, and I believe they are in the process of putting together new material for our ears and ourselves to be blessed by. In this episode, we talk about different topics such as authenticity in a social media age. We also talk about the seed of their work in the world and how and when it began. We will also delve into Dharma. What is our Dharma? What is our truth? And what's holding us back? And what is it that's unique within our existence that we are to incarnate into the world, down to our toes and beyond? And then at the end of the interview, we have the chance to listen to a sacred performance from Illumina, sharing a calling or prayer from the Iroquois tribe. And they'll talk a little bit about it at the end. So let's get into the interview. Welcome, Anam. Welcome, Leela, Illumina, to the Beats of Bhakti podcast. I think I'm very excited about this. I think it was about 9 years ago when I first connected with you and we first met in a festival called the Festival of Life in London. And I remember being in a room, there's quite a few people there, and you started your set with a beautiful, beautiful mantra, beautiful chant. And it opened me up to a new way of sharing devotional music that I hadn't heard previously. And even to this day, after being exposed to many different artists, it still feels very unique. And every time I enter a space where you're sharing your music and leading in chanting, it opens me up in a unique way. So I'm very excited to have you here. Over those 9 years, we've connected in various different ways, and I've been to various of your different events. You even played at my wedding.
Yes.
Which is amazing. And so I would like to talk to you about all of those different things that you do, because I've been in different spaces with you and you've done various different things. Mm. And when I speak to you, there's other, you know, feathers to your bow, if you like. So my first question to you is, you're both, you know, facilitators, you're coaches in various different ways, teachers, and you lead in various different disciplines. But what do you primarily see yourselves as? Musicians, therapists, teachers?
For me, Illumina is a shared experience. So what we do is an equalizer. It creates an equalizing field so that a PhD and a president and a beggar and a, you know, hairdresser or whatever can all come together in one place, and the mantras equalize their consciousness so that the human part, which is concerned with the dual side of life, all the polar opposites, is kept aside for a while, and we focus on that, the bigger part of us that is, that has to do with that shares the same collective consciousness. And so for us, what are we really? I would say from my side, we are facilitators of that collective experience. And from the start, we were clear that we don't want to be performing. We don't want to be, you know, being a role. if there is a role to be played, it is more like facilitating what is already there and helping it to be experienced tangibly through the music, and you know.
Beautiful. And do you see that? I love that way that you describe that, of something being there already and you're just guiding people towards that through the various different means that you use. Do you also see that in your various other disciplines and things that you share, for example, the yoga teaching and the vocal coaching?
Definitely. Facilitator is exactly the word that came to me as well, because I feel that more and more, as we and individually, us together and individually, as we continue on this journey, at least from my side, it becomes clearer and clearer that I'm a vessel, and the clearer I can be, the more I feel the offering is given and it's of service. And it feels like the whole process over 10 years now of being a facilitator has helped to empty out the one that's trying to be something, that's trying to be a teacher, that's trying to, be something in a way. And I feel like more and more, if I can be that open vessel, which is actually, I mean, I think we'll talk a bit about it later, but the women's work that I've started to do more and more, that seems to be the learning that I'm receiving more and more, that, to be this open vessel.
And I guess that's a very precious and delicate matter to embody, and probably quite a beautiful one to be involved in through the work that you do. Which does bring me on to what you were just mentioning, which is, what is it that you're working on at the moment, both collectively and individually?
For me, personally, working on music is always closest. So helping your album come through, the songs that we're working on, our own songs, our own new album, we're working on those. That so Illumina does take up a fair bit of the workflow. And then for my own, a lot of music, like vocal, growing in myself as a singer. So I have my own little YouTube singing channel where I'm learning Indian classical music and learning to sing Indian Bollywood songs of my childhood that I've always wanted to sing and record. Just doing those fun kind of things, side projects that just keep me happy. But the main focus, as work is related, is Illumina singing wise. And of course, singing students, you know, that's where most of the income is, for my personal income. And it's a busy day, all those things put together.
Well, for me, definitely Illumina is a big part of, it's an ever-evolving being. And we've been doing Facebook Lives for the last few months, and that's been really powerful. And it's opened up something in our ability to share with lots of people every single week, all over the world. And it's really just, we had one last night, and it's a reminder that we're all so connected. And even though we might be in different locations, there is this field of resonance that through the mantras anyway, we can be together. And from that, it feels like other things have opened up, retreats, you know, being asked to bring the music to different locations and for different events. And so it feels like, lots of other projects have come from that as well.
So could you speak to that just a little bit more in the sense of those Monday mantras that you do? You know, for someone who maybe would not have heard that before, what is that exactly?
Well, we call them Illumina's Magic Mantra Mondays. And every Monday, 7:30 p.m. sharpish, we go live, do a live stream on Facebook, and choose a mantra. The first Monday of each month is we do Ganesh Mantra. Ganesh is the deity for starting any project, or the deity of starting. And then we have done Kuan Yin Mantra for compassion. Yesterday we did Om Mani Padme Hum, which is a Buddhist mantra for enlightenment. All sorts from all over the world, really. Mainly Buddhist, Vedic mantras. And people who are into the same thing, who like to chant along, we make it a little bit musical and put in some, you know, make it interesting so that it's not just this grind. And make it a little bit of a hangout time with everyone. And we love it. We just really love it. Lots of people join in, then we boost the live stream as well, so lots of people watch it afterwards. And so it's become a thing. There's a bit of a tribe growing now where people are, like, they bring their children in and say hi to Luca, guys. He's watching with us. Or say hi to him or her or my child.
That's beautiful. That's really nice. You know, rather than sitting, it is sitting in front of a screen, but it's sitting in front of a screen in a nourishing way.
Yes.
You know, because social media is growing exponentially. Mm. And what a wonderful way to use it in a way that's actually going to propel our hearts and into the world from that space. Mm. Wonderful. Mm. And before we move on, did you want to mention something about the women's groups?
The women's groups? Yeah. So working with women has been something that's been calling for a number of years. And it was finally in January ready to birth itself. So we had our first women's gathering January, and we've just had the second one this weekend. And it's really powerful. I've been experiencing this kind of, as I was saying, this kind of bubbling underneath this work that wants to come through, this birthing of this, I keep hearing the word new paradigm that wants to express itself in the world. You know, we've been running on quite what we might say a masculine dominated existence for quite a long time, and as we look around in the world, not that there's anything that's gone wrong, but it's gone in a certain direction, and we need to. There's a sense of wanting a rebalancing to happen. So there's a sense of the re-emergence, we might say, of the divine feminine, so that this balancing out can happen, and it's coming through everything and everyone and these female bodies and the kind of reconnection to the womb energy and recognizing that there's this incredible resonance chamber and sensory organ within our bodies that connects us to Shakti, feminine essence, to life force that's just magical, mysterious, and part of everything. And these circles really are there to support all women who feel drawn to reconnect with that essence.
That's beautiful. And I imagine that having that space available to people from various backgrounds who feel that they need that, they need to connect with that. Maybe, you know, in various cultures around the world, whatever they may be, there are various ways where that feminine energy is repressed, is held down within all the cultures, within our own, within, you know, all around the world.
Yeah.
And for them to think, I can go to this space, I can speak my truth, I can speak from vulnerability, and I will not be judged, and I will be held. And it's magical that those spaces are becoming available for that exploratory work and considering it means to be a woman, I assume, you know, and that presence in the world within the micro and the macro, as you mentioned, you know, that energy coming through. I mean, being a primary school teacher, it's interesting of teaching children from various backgrounds and faiths. And there are certain children who you feel like you really want to just drag them out of themselves because of maybe a culture that they've being grown up in, you know, to just remind them, you have a voice, participate, you have a voice.
Yeah,
it sometimes
exactly.
feels like I'm badgering them, like, it's Mr. A getting on me again. But it's, you know, just to remind them, you know, because maybe they're not hearing that message from somewhere else.
Mm.
You know, what do you think? No, you tell me what you think.
Mm.
Find your voice, you know, because, you know, it's powerful.
Mm.
It's powerful stuff, and we need it in the world.
Children.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know, as you say, your patriarchy hasn't worked so far. You know, it's worked to a certain degree, but yeah, rebalance definitely needed. So thank you for showing that. So that's kind of what you guys are doing at the present. I'd love to know, when and how did Illumina begin? Quite an open question there.
Yeah,
but love it.
Illumina, how did we begin? What happened was back in 1935. what we used to do in those days, usually in my flat, in my room in my land, we would wake up in the morning and then just sing some of our favorite mantras, songs from, you know, Deva Premalan Miten or Snatam Kaur,
yeah, sure.
and all these guys who are were well established in those days as well. And just sing some, you know, just have a little jam up. And we found that it was such a powerful experience. Our voices melded together so well, and it was just
we would inevitably end up in tears.
We would end up in tears, yeah, because it was so beautiful.
It
yeah.
was just touching us so much.
Yeah.
Like something was happening. We didn't quite know at that time what it was, but we could feel it was very powerful.
Mm.
And quite soon we started to realize that it wasn't just for his bedroom, that it wanted to be shared.
Yeah, yeah. We just quickly realized really that if we get so much out of these, then we're obliged, it's our duty to bring it to other people, and hopefully everyone else will feel the same way with this music that we do. And that's just how it started, and we just never looked back. We got a bit of a repertoire together, or you know, we were already singing quite a few of these songs anyway. They were all our whole repertoire was cover songs. We didn't have a single song of our own. It's unimaginable now after three albums, and all we do is our own songs. But yeah, that's how we started, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Humble beginnings. Or still humble beginnings, but very simple. Mm. Yeah.
And I love how you shared the feeling side of things and what connected with you with this path. Mm. You know, well, this happened, and then this happened, and then that happened. You know, the practical side of things. It's really, really nice to hear that it was just this natural process where you felt the potency of devotional music in any faith. That devotional music, when sung with heart and integrity and realness, it just brings us and brings a space that is totally prior to the mind exists, as you were saying previously, brings us to that space that's always there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for us, devotional music, chants from across the world, cultures, they have a different resonance in the sense that, you know, modern music exists for its own sake. But with devotional music, when we do that in a group, one is plugging into something bigger than oneself. So that music doesn't exist for its own sake. Mm-hmm. It has an intention bigger than itself.
Right.
And that's what, for me, that's what gives it its power, so that it's not a rock concert, or it's not something that simply exists for its own enjoyment, its own sake. It's fantastic. It's really lovely. But this gives it a wider and a deeper length and breadth that doesn't exist if we are just on the resonance of something that is just for its own sake.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I know things don't just happen You know, there's no such thing as suddenly. You know, we're talking about the birth of Illumina. Things just don't happen suddenly. There's a build-up, and then there's, you know, a sudden push. Like someone doesn't walk off a cliff. There's various steps they took, and then all of a sudden they drop. But on a positive way, rather than falling off a cliff, not the best metaphor.
For some people, that might be a positive thing.
Swan dive.
That might be the bravest thing they ever did.
See what happens. But was there a moment where, I guess, there was a real connection to what it is that you were doing and what was happening? Was there maybe a particular night or a particular day, you know, maybe it may be different for both of you, where you really connected to what you were doing and felt the potency of it, which we've been talking about?
I don't know if you remember. I do remember we were sitting and we'd just done Om Namo Sanatam Kaur's version. We just sung it. And do you remember that? And then we were really just, tears were coming. And that's when we had a little conversation about, we need to get, other people need to hear this, you know. And it wasn't so much that we need to hear us. It's not that other people need to hear us. People need to experience this, whatever we are experiencing right now. And I remember that clearly, that conversation. I think that was the turning point when what was perhaps subconsciously seen was then consciously seen, and like, oh yeah, this needs to be out there.
Yeah,
I remember that.
It's interesting because I thought you were going to say another time that we sang that same mantra, the Om Namo, was at the kind of celebration after a wedding of our friends, a really good friend of ours. And she had invited other people to do the music, but then when we got into it was kind of a relaxed space back at their house. She'd asked us to, would we like to sing a song? And it was really early days. We were doing many other things at the time as well. And so we sang Sanatam Kaur Om Namo. And it was really powerful, and really kind of lots of people were in tears, and the response afterwards was really strong. They were like, even from our friend who hadn't quite realized what we'd been doing, she said, oh, I would have had you do the whole music if I'd known. And you know, just response from there, you know, the mom and the dad and, you know, various other people. And I remember, even before we'd have that had that reflection from them, the feeling of it, being in that space, facilitating the music coming through, I could feel the potency of it. I could feel that it was powerful. I could feel that it was bigger than us, and that it was our duty or our offering to bring this.
Yeah, our dharma.
Dharma, yeah. Mm.
To, you know, we would be remiss if we stepped back or like, no, who are we and all that nonsense. No, let's just, this is amazing. Let's just see if others would find it amazing too, like we do, you know.
And would you almost see it as, you know, when you say dharma, that it's a responsibility. It's a literal, with no interpretation,
absolutely,
a responsibility to bring this. And
absolutely.
Do this.
100% agreed there. Mm. And again, it you know, if we, it becomes a bit more tragic if we recognize that this is we need to be doing this, and then we don't do it, or we find reasons not to do it, or delay it, or procrastinate, or whatever. Then it's a bit it's tragic, because life had, you know, there was a purpose in that, and you know, at whatever time, hopefully that will then. So I would say to the listeners that if you resonate, that you have something, you have a gift, everyone has a gift. Absolutely everyone has a gift. Many gifts. And if you resonate with what we're saying and you feel inspired, then don't hang back. You know, don't let the doubts fool you into not doing what you're supposed to be doing with your gift. Let you know, wrap it up and give it away to people, and they can receive, and they can open those gifts and get the joy of being gifted to out of it.
Because it's interesting because I've spoken to people who have been inspired to bring something creative into the world, you know, whatever that may be. You know, I've obviously spoken before from a sense or a domain beyond themselves, but through themselves, and they've connected to it, but they haven't. Because I guess they're what I've heard from people who I've had conversations with is there maybe a sense of ego about it, or who am I to be able to share this? Why should I do this? Maybe I should just lean back a little bit, you know. And then there's this sense of self-judgment and self-doubt that can come in,
which is
a poison, you know, for people who have some. I've seen beautiful artists, you know, just
exactly
simple drawing, for example. I'm like, that's amazing, you know. How could this be transformative to others in that way? So it's going back to that being responsible, you know. If you had a job, you wouldn't just think, oh, I'm not good at this. No, you're responsible. You got to turn up and do it.
And learn. So that's what it takes. Learn the job, you know.
So it's like a soul contract almost.
Yes.
Like a it's a different type of contract.
Life gives us that, gives us responsibilities, because to exist is to be responsible, able to respond. So life gives us, to exist is to have that, you know. And we don't want to be living in a pastime paradise, just passing the time away and hoping for something to turn up.
I'm totally writing that down. I love that. Pastime paradise. I mentioned it when my wife says, Netflix or reading? which one's going to be a pastime paradise? Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
it's just all too easy to not feel good enough, you know. But the strange thing is, it's just as easy to step up. It's just as easy. It really is. It's not, the step isn't the huge step. And to hang back isn't the huge step. They're both the same distance. And it really just depends on us. Just jump off that cliff, man.
There we go. Sure.
It is an interesting one, though, because it's, you know, particularly around the work with the women, it's taken years for me to get to a place where I feel like it has felt ready in a way for a while, but it was only now that it could actually come into being. And there was lots of doubt, and there was lots of fear, and there was lots of, who am I to do this? Do I have anything to offer? But now that I've stepped into it, it's you know, I'm reminded of that Marianne Williamson quote, who am I not to, actually? Mm-hmm. Who am I not to? It's like, it's actually more self-importance or ego or whatever to not do it.
Yeah, right.
And when I step into it, I'm here. I'm a facilitator. I'm not so much teaching, but I'm offering something that I know is needed. And who am I not to stand up and offer this? So
yeah, it's a funny one, really, because all our doubts fool us really into all sorts of actions that disempower us. And it is a funny one, because then it becomes a vicious cycle before you know it. Then that's why I really feel that at least what we do must be a community thing, because the power of it lies together, so that we all share our doubts and our victories together. You know, we often say in the beginning of our events, concerts, whatever, we say, you know, you guys are performing for us as much as we are performing for you, and we're all performing for each other. So let's all either sink or swim together. And that gives people permission to, hey, we're all in this together. Let's, you know, not hang back. Let's sing. Doesn't matter what my voice is like. Let's just sing these beautiful things.
Of course. And before I move on to the next question, there's just something on this same vein, but something you mentioned about, you know, it'd been brewing in you for years. You'd been working with this way of bringing spaces, but also I would assume within yourself for a while. And I guess, although, you know, there is, we should not allow self-doubt to guide us, there's always that sense of, well, yes, you're going to do it, but you need to do it responsibly, because otherwise there's, you know, it's almost like a get-rich-quick scheme on the internet for spirituality, and making sure that, which we'll come on to later, there's authenticity yes. what it is that's being shared, and integrity.
Big part of that, yeah. Mm. Authentic.
Because otherwise it should just be chaos in the world.
Yeah, totally.
Mm. So how have things changed since you both started in terms of the work you do, the spaces that you hold, and the people who attend, and what was maybe available for people at that time, because you've been playing in and around London, I know in different parts of the UK and other places as well. And, you know, maybe the reasons that people attend. Just speak to that a little bit about how the spaces have changed that in that way.
Do you want to go? You know, the strange thing is that the essence of what we're doing, even after, 10 odd years, isn't it 10 more, less, a little bit, whatever, about a decade-ish of doing this constantly, a lot, all the time, in different settings, small, big, huge, large, very small, doesn't matter. The essence, you know, what we started out with, that chemistry hasn't changed a bit. Because I don't think that is... I think where the source that it comes from is beyond evolution. It simply is. So no matter how much time passes, it will still maintain its gradient. But we have grown as human beings through it, you know, through doing the mantras. We have grown, you know, more experienced at bringing them through, more bit more polished, perhaps. You know, our voices have opened up and improved, and you know, through. So we know the material a lot better by just doing it and doing it, doing it. We've got our own 3 albums now, which is self. We do all the instruments on there, everything. We record it, produce it. So we've learned so much along the way about how to bring that through, bring that bigger waters through in our little streams, you know. But the water itself hasn't changed at all. It's very surprising, because it just doesn't occur to you when you start that what you got is what you got. And that will change you.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what, I don't know how else to express it, but it's the journey is the human journey, not the divine. The divine is not needing any journeys. It's amazing. Mm. It's us that are changing.
Mm. Yeah. It's like, even as we speak about the beginning, as it were, sitting in that Milan flat, it is, there is a timelessness that came through then. And comes through every time.
Powerfully.
And like you say, I think the mantras and just continuing to do it and just doing all the other spiritual practices that we do in our own ways, that there's been an emptying out and a refinement of the
expression.
The expression. Mm. I feel like there has always been this resonance between the voices that come through, and it's felt every single time that there's a uniqueness to that. And you're right, you know, the amount of people that come and enjoy has expanded, and we've got the albums, and we've played in so many different places and
some amazing venues. Places. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. And,
So, and do you feel that there's, you know, you just mentioned at the end there, you know, lots of different people.
Mm.
Do you feel that maybe it's becoming more, I don't know if I'm using the right word in the correct manner, but secular in a sense, and more sort of, I don't want to use the word mainstream. But mainstream in the sense of, I guess what I'm trying to say is people who are outside of that world who are just peering in and liking the look of what they see.
Mm-hmm.
Are you noticing more people feel welcome in that space, or more willing to just think, actually, yeah, I'm just going to do it?
Mm.
You know, what in the sense of the people that are coming to your spaces?
The way I see it, or the way I've seen it over the years, is that... It's like a whole range of choices. So we happen to be very fortunate in that we, you know, so on this end of the spectrum, you have acts like us, you know, or groups like us, artists like us, Deva Premal, all these guys, the big shots, who are very secular. The music is from all around the world. Mm-hmm. It's not really like a specific folk thing or a specific cultural, extremely, you know, specific. It can speak to a much broader palette in whatever music people are interested in. And then you have the totally hardcore chanting, you know, that with the harmonium and the Hare Krishnas. And so that's on the other end, where that may not have that broader appeal, and probably never will, because it's not meant, you know, that's, do you know what I mean? So there's
absolutely
a whole spectrum of that.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started out, there weren't a lot of artists that you could listen to. But nowadays, man, just type in chanting on YouTube and you'll
literally
thousands of videos and really amazing music out there. A lot of it is really crap. I don't like it. It's just cheap rubbish. But as with anything, really, you know, there's always the cream rises to the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is some amazing artists doing amazing work on that you can find on Spotify, and fabulous music. Yeah.
I mean, that's a good point that you raise, that there are so many new artists in this. Now, I'm going to say genre, but that does lead me to the next inquiry together is, well, what do we call, you know, I've spoken to artists who have put their music on Bandcamp, for example, and they're looking at the categories.
Yeah.
And if they, for example, you know, a word that many people may use is devotional music.
Mm.
And not that it's a negative thing, but where if you type in devotional music, it tends to be on these platforms associated with Christian music.
Absolutely.
And gospel music.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, you know, as a in terms of an artist wanting to, you know, because you're an artist, you want to target an audience, you want to bring the music to who wants to listen to it. And I guess there's this, well, what is it? You mean, for this podcast, I see that I'm bringing, you know, shedding light on and bringing forth sacred, devotional, medicine music. Those are the three sort of main, or mantra music. But and it's this new niche that's growing. I mean, just recently we had Sanatam Kaur on the Grammys, you know, winning Best New Age Album.
Amazing, yeah.
Which is a breakthrough, you know. So what's your thoughts on that? You know, is there a name for this genre?
I guess when people ask me what kind of music we do, I do reach for a few different words. Sacred music, world music,
right, yes,
devotional music. So I do pull on, you know, I don't feel it fits into just one thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's still developing, you know, and things like rock and roll, jazz. There was a point when there was no word called jazz, right? And then it started appearing in mass consciousness that what these bands were doing down in New Orleans back in the 20s, 30s, whatever.
Right.
So then this word came through to describe this. And, you know, those words came through fairly quickly. This new age sort of chanting music has been around since the 90s, it's like well presented by Deva Premal and Miten and Jay Uttal, especially. Very well presented on a world class level, not cheap recordings done, you know, in the ashram somewhere banging the harmonium. So I think I think there will come a term will happen for it in mass consciousness, a word will happen to describe it, but because it's now it's really blooming, it's suddenly woof, so it's not long I expect that some word will come where you can slot this whole music umbrella into that. But when I was selling new age music, this music we would just sell under chants.
I see.
And so any categories that we have to put online, you know, Spotify, this, that, all the rest of it, then I just search for new age music and new age music, mantra music.
Okay. Kind of okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you mentioned other genres there, you know, blues, jazz, or the various different types of music, and they almost have their own scales. I mean, they do have their own scales that makes it a bluesy sound, you know, or whatnot. But this, I guess this music doesn't have a, it doesn't have a key, doesn't have a scale, it doesn't have anything that signifies it. But I would, I guess it's that just the instruments that are used with heart. And the voice is used with heart, with a different intention. And then put those all into machine and, you know, see what the output is, you know, in that respect, you know.
Definitely.
Put them together. Because, you know, I had this thought of, you know, there's so many catchy pop songs out there. They're just really catchy, you know, they're made in that manner. And then I was listening to one and it just had some really beautiful chords, piano chords, and it was very simple. And although, you know, as you mentioned before, in and of itself, it was a beautiful song. I think it was a love song. Very nice. Very, very beautiful to listen to. And the artist had a superb voice. Superb.
How wonderful.
Very refined voice. And then I thought to myself, well, what if that same keys, those same notes, had a mantra on it? Or different type of lyrics that were... came through... the artist being slightly handed over to what was happening, you know, in that magical process of writing. Not to say that all artists don't have that magical piece of writing, but that different sense of wanting, you know, coming from the heart and that awakened heart and the presence of the divinity in that creative space. What would come out of that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting that, and that's something that I'm experimenting with, is coming, you know, creating, using non-traditional and traditional means, creating soundscapes and... and then they just get transformed then when a mantra is placed over the top. So it's this, which is great, it's this open field. And then it then allows, I guess, the other artists who come from different genres to make devotional music, devotional jazz. I just recently made a devotional soca tune. So it's, you know, it opens up this field to, well, okay then, what is music?
Exactly.
Where did music initially come from? What's the history of music and noise and sound? Back to the caves and why they would use music and how it evolved through that. So I think it's an interesting consideration in terms of what is this music, but then what is music in general and its purpose.
Yeah, for thousands of years, we did not have pop songs. We the only music that was, there were only two types of music. One was devotional music and one was romantic music. That was it, you know, for all of our history, known history in this cycle. And it's only recently that we have, since maybe 20s, 30s and beyond, we have music that exists, that like, you know, it exists for its own sake. There's no devotional connotations to it. It's not about God or anyone else. And from that then came rock and roll, you know, exciting for the young people of that time. You know. And so it makes us wonder, okay, what is music, as you said? And then why have boundaries in it in the first place? You know, especially in this day and age, even GarageBand or anything is available to everyone. So a lot of experimentation can happen, and out of that, some amazing music is coming through and can and will continue to come through, which will cross boundaries, you know. So it is a very rich time for music, you know, I think. Yeah.
I was just thinking before, as you were speaking about, you know, blues has its own scale, jazz has its own scale, and there was this, the word intention came in that moment, that, you know, devotional music, sacred music, there's a deeper intention. Maybe intention sounds maybe a little bit abstract, but intention feels like the scale, in a sense, like that's the kind of thread that, you know, this, the music that we share and other artists who are in a similar kind of offer similar music, is like there's an intention, like, of connection, I guess, for want of a better word.
That's a good word, yeah.
Yeah, intention for connection. Yeah, absolutely, because I know when, you know, when I listen to something and I know, oh, this really connects, this really drops me into my feeling, and sometimes it can just be 8 bars. Beginning 8 bars of a track, and I know that I'm in, and there is that element of forgetting oneself, and just being safe to receive that music and absorb that music and be changed by that music. And with the heart intention of the artist, that way of receiving music is allowed.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, you know, that intention to connect, because it just drops. It's one thing about chanting, it just drops one into one's feeling immediately, away from oneself.
Yeah.
And it's a way to forget one, not forget one's problems, but forget oneself and self-contraction, identity. And that intention for connection facilitates that.
Yeah.
Which is why this music is so beautiful. Any music that allows someone to do that is beautiful.
And then it has a depth that perhaps a, you know, a pop song may not have. It has a depth that is unadvertised, unmarketed, that you can't package and sell, that you just have to experience it, and the artist has has to have enough faith in themselves to want to be able to first get that out there, and then the listener has to have enough curiosity to then access that. Because how do you market that element, you know, in music? You can't.
It's just there.
It's just either there or it's not. There, like you said, the first 10 seconds of a track, you can tell.
So it brings me on to, we spoke earlier about authenticity. And how is that important to you in the process of sharing music and creating music, facilitating spaces, but then also being a presence on social media, like you said, you know? Authenticity, what does that, why is it important, and what does it mean to you?
Why is it important? It feels like the most important thing. And that's just become clearer and clearer over this journey into more clarity and more real living, that to be transparent is really the only way to be in life, really. And that necessarily, for me anyway, has to move beyond my relationships and my connections with, you know, my family. Because it's not like there's a border to authenticity. I'll be authentic over here, but I'll, you know, put on a face and for social media, because it feels ridiculous. And, you know, not that it's easy. It's not easy to be that real and to be that exposed and to be that honest. It's certainly for me, it's been and continues to be a journey. And you know, sometimes it's really, really able to come through very clearly. And sometimes, you know, there's the one that's scared of what people think. And it feels like it's the most important thing, really.
It's interesting you mentioned, you know, social media, because I think sometimes people may be potentially more authentic on social media than they are with their friends and family. You know, in the sense that, you know, because it can go both ways, right? People can just be putting on a face for social media, but at the same time, they're just more vulnerable. They are on their Insta page than they are with their friends. And then I guess that's a sense, as you say, that authenticity throughout your life, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, to me, I just lose interest in music. If we talk about music, you can hear authenticity in someone's voice, you know, or in the way they hit the piano keys, or how you know, you can hear it, you can hear the realness, and you can also pick up the falseness, the put on face in music. You can hear, at least I can hear it, and I lose interest if it's not real. You know, it could just be some vague thing, 30 seconds long, but if it's real, then it gets you.
Mm. Yes.
Or it could be a hit song that you hear in the radio somewhere, and you don't totally ignore it, because it's got nothing to say to you, you know? So authenticity, it's a way to live. It's not something, I don't think it's something to... that one, you know, to search for in music itself, and I'll be authentic in my music, but it's a way to live, and then the music ideally should reflect that way of living. You know, that's the easy way, to make music.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, you know, this time is asking, the time that we're living in now is asking more and more for the lines to blur between everything, in that, you know, if I'm going to teach a yoga class, I don't put on my yoga teacher outfit and put on my yoga teacher voice, that I'm just exactly the same person as when I'm at home chilling out with my friends or my partner. When I go...
Do you talk in an Irish accent with them as well?
Sometimes. And that's been an incredible journey, because I think, you know, to feel those lines becoming like blurring, becoming less defined, right? I'm going to be this person here, I'll be that person there, da, 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 you know, we feel that we have to be something different in order to present a certain face. And then we'll be seen in that light. It doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, it's
like,
of course.
This is who I am. This is my offering. Some people will resonate, others won't.
Absolutely.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, I guess in different fields of life, that's going to be needing to be navigated in very sensitive and delicate ways.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
For example, thinking of my friends and the work that they do.
And
if, you know, a conversation came out about something, it's like, well, I think this, then that's just, they're just... shunned for the rest of the meet, you know. I'm just being extreme, but obviously it's a delicate matter, and
definitely
needs
definitely
must, you know, at various
definitely
times.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I guess, yeah, within that, you know, there's discernment. It's not just a whole like,
yeah, of course.
You know,
yeah,
it
is
a, you know, and over time, as you, I'll speak for myself, as I've kind of continued on this journey, there is a refining to that, and you know, of course, we're all these different flavors, and different flavors will come out in different times, but there's a but if there's an intention and a wish for authenticity, I think that's really what I was
of course. And I think that's, you know, I heard once my spiritual teacher, he said once that, you know, he spoke of realizers, you know, gurus and saints around the world, that they're as precious as a diamond, and you would know the difference. So when if you're walking down the beach, you would know the difference between a pebble and the diamond the size of your fist. You would just immediately recognize it. And he would also say, you know, not about perfection, being the perfect person, and not having your own patterns that are, you know, there, that people will see each other's patterns, especially living in a, you know, cooperative living circumstance or community. You know, the best and worst of you will come out. But it's that sense of that commitment with authenticity to love through that process. And there was one thing he said as well was, you know, those who fail to a commitment of love wear it like a pile of garbage, and it's so obvious, like a pile of garbage, you know, in an extreme sort of saying, but in the sense that we can be authentic, and it's, you know, it's just being ourselves, who we are, in the so-called good and bad, but in all parts and just being okay with it, you know, just being, if you're wild, be wild. If you're reserved, be reserved.
Yeah.
And it's just this, we're keeping each other in check, which is ridiculous, really.
It's all political correctness nonsense. I just, you know, fortunately, we don't really move in those kind of shallow circles.
Yeah.
We just, I just mm-hmm. wouldn't be, I'm not the kind of fish that would be found mm-hmm. in those waters. Mm. But, just don't, it's best not to buy into all of that. Mm. And just be yourself. Just be yourself. And what does that mean to you? Mm. Go on a lifetime's journey about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't be afraid, you know. Mm.
Mm. It's kind of, being yourself and then forgetting yourself at the same time.
Mm. Yeah. You know, and rediscover, because tomorrow you may be a different you.
Absolutely.
And who is that?
Yeah.
You know.
Mm. Okay. So we're coming to the end of our wonderful conversation together. Mm. It's not even an interview. It just feels like a wonderful connection and conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So two more questions. The last one, the second last one, penultimate question, is if there could only ever be one song that people were allowed to listen from your works, what would it be? One track. Imagine it was for everyone. You could only ever release one track. What would it be?
I mean, it feels like it feels like Nyawe.
That's a difficult question. I mean, I would go with Nyawe because we always open with it, and it's just the best opener ever, because it's a track of gratitude and acknowledgement of us as, thank you for being.
Mm.
That's it. Thank you for being. Mm. So
and
I would
people
say
and people remember it.
People remember it.
Still now, people who maybe come to sing with us one time will have remembered that mantra or that prayer. Nyawe, thank you for being. And it's amazing to me that it kind of stays with people, and it feels like, I'd go with Nyawe.
Yeah, okay, I'd go with Nyawe. Yeah,
and I would definitely receive Nyawe as the one track. I mean, I love so many of your tracks, but that one really just drops, and it's what a fabulous way to open a space. I'm redefining adjectives. It is fabulous. I'm redefining these adjectives.
Fabulous.
It's a fabulous way to open up a space. Redefine these adjectives. and the last question, which I will ask to many of people who come through this interview through Beats of Bhakti, is seeing it's called Beats of Bhakti. What does Bhakti mean to you? If it could be, small phrase or metaphor.
Mm. That's a good question. What would Bhakti mean to you? For me, I can only say that authenticity, honesty, I stay away from the word truth, because it's become a relative term now. Your truth, my truth, and it's all truth, truth. Truth is a fashionable word. But honesty you can't argue with. if I ask someone to be honest, or myself to be honest, there's no debate there. So, the word honest. Honesty.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm.
What does bhakti mean to you? Yeah, honesty. Mm. Total, unconditional, brutal, all-encompassing, omnipresent, always there, honesty. Mm. Yeah.
And I guess that's being stripped down to what you don't even know that's there.
Yes, it's
through.
Just where you have become now after being honest, really training yourself in it. And the trick about honesty is that it can only arise out of a still present mind, still present being. Mm. Mm. Otherwise, there is no honesty there. Mm. Mm. So that would be my... Mm. Try and top that one.
Oh.
You got this.
You got this, girl.
Well, the images that spring to mind are a prayer pose and a kind of opening the arms in a kind of surrendered way. And maybe the words that go with that is like giving oneself up to something bigger, like offering oneself up to something bigger, and then allowing whatever wants to come through from there.
Mm. Beautiful. Thank you.
She topped it.
She does. I just like she got you. spiritually one upping each other.
Yeah.
No, top
yeah.
No, I really felt that. Okay, that brings us to the end of the connection and conversation aspect of this Beats of Bhakti session episode. And now we are going to have a beautiful offering from Lumina with the track that you said would be the only one, if it could only be one track to listen to.
Yeah.
So this is a prayer song that we start pretty much all of our Ilomena gatherings with. And it's a really simple chant, has one word, and then the meaning of that word, which is Nyawe. And it's from the Iroquois tribe, it's a greeting. So instead of hello, goodbye, see you later, those kind of things, they just have Nyawe, which means thank you for being. Such a lovely way to ground into gratitude at the beginning of our chanting journeys.
Nyawe.
Jesus.